Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Raffaella, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to episode 3 of Stoma for Life here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Our guest today is Pete Hill, presenter of the hugely popular radio show The D Word here on UK Health Radio that focuses on dementia. Born in London, Pete spent over 30 years in local government as a chartered environmental health practitioner while combining a part-time career in sports radio. He spent 2 years seconded to the Health Protection Agency, running a national partnership working project, and was the appointed head of climate change at Whalen Hatfield Borough Council. His media CV includes presenting live sports commentaries for a number of TV and radio stations, as well as writing regular articles for sports magazines. In 2013, he took up a post as a news editor for an environmental website while running his own consultancy, Jigsaw PSPH, which provides social media coverage for public health events. Pete admits his outlook on life changed in 2016 when he was appointed as Group Activity Support Manager to Essex by the Alzheimer's Society. His duties involve managing 6 weekly social groups for people living with dementia in the community. When the contract ended in 2018, Pete decided to combine his interest in dementia with his lifelong love of radio and started the D Word, as he was shocked that nobody had taken up the idea. He's already gotten himself a reputation as the man with the traveling microphone who likes to chat and produces radio in his back bedroom. Now, today the tables are turned and he is here to talk about his own bowel cancer journey. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Thank you indeed, Raffaella. Thanks for the introduction. I am indeed in my back bedroom talking about a different subject. And I just want to congratulate you, first of all, on getting this show going, because it's such an important subject and becomes a very important subject when you go through the journey that both you and I have been through. And I really wish that when I was going through part of that journey, I had something like this to listen to.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I felt the need to share, not just share my journey, but also let other people hear that there are people out there that have gone through what we have gone through and are managing. We are fine. We're managing, you know, with all its with all the roller coaster rides that we've been through, we are still living our lives and we're living a good life. So don't you just want to start off the show by sharing your personal cancer journey and how it all started?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it really started at the beginning of 2022. The end of 2021, I had COVID and didn't really feel right after that. I don't attribute that to anything happened later, but kind of health journey went a little bit down the hill. Wasn't quite feeling myself. And come March of that year, I noticed that my bowel movements had become a bit irregular and things were a bit irritable. And then one day I noticed a little bit of blood after I'd gone to the toilet. So I saw the GP. After a chat with the GP, he referred me to a specialist. The specialist carried out a couple of tests and then said, well, really, we need to do a colonoscopy. So he carried out a colonoscopy. For those that don't know, that's a camera study. It was before we came on air, Raffaele, you asked me, when did you get diagnosed? And I think that anyone who's been through this journey will recognize this because they will know exactly the date and I'm almost to the time of when I was diagnosed. I had the colonoscopy and I had noticed at the time that a few other people there had been told by the nurse, oh, things are okay, he'd come back in a couple of months. And the nurse was very, I think we ought to go and see the specialist. And at that point, you're thinking, well, this is a bit out of the ordinary. Mm-hmm. And he was very good. He sat me down. It was 22nd of April, 2022, at probably about 1:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I'm sorry to tell you, you've got a tumour in your lower bowel. I don't know what happened with you, but my mind kind of just raced and it was, you know, it was almost like a dream. Is this really happening? Is it, you know, you sit back and don't really have a time to react. You think, yeah. Well, you know, what do I do now? Mm. And time he sort of, said, yeah, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I said, time sort of stands still. It's very surreal. Time stands still and you're sort of watching as a third person. Well, that's how it was for me. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt.
Yeah, no, you do, you're right. You feel like you're in a bubble and the rest of the world's kind of going round. He was reassuring. He said to me, look, it's in your lower bowel. We've caught it a reasonable time. It is operable, and I would suggest that operation is the best way. We can remove it. And, you know, he came up with something which was kind of nice. He said, look, you're young enough and fit enough to get through this. So I thought, well, that's nice. You know, not everybody says that. Yeah. He said, look, we'll have to do some further scans, come back in a week, and then we'll progress things forward. So CT scan, MRI scan, usual stuff, came back in a week's time, and he referred me to a colorectal surgeon. That's where it all started. I then saw the colorectal surgeon, Al Windsor, who was amazing, incredible bedside manner, gave me the details and said, look, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. He then gave me a choice and said, look, when we reconnect things, I can either do it, and there is a possibility that there may be some leakage, which could cause a problem, or I can give you a temporary stoma, which takes away that possibility, and then we can reverse that operation in due course. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, you know, that's what this very eminent man suggests. That's what I went with.
Yeah.
And then I had the operation on the, again, remember the date, 10th of June, about 2:30 p.m.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Life-changing, I'm sure. I remember it distinctly as well. My surgeon, actually, he had to draw it up for me because I'd never heard of the word stoma. I'd never heard it before. I don't know what it was like in your case, but I obviously knew what the actual thing was when he explained it, but I'd never heard the terminology stoma. So he actually, I remember him drawing a little sketch for me to know what was actually going to happen.
Yeah, exactly the same for me. I had no idea. And I, you know, looking back on it, I've said to people, it was almost a bit of a double whammy because you're trying to get used to the cancer diagnosis and everything that brings with it, and then suddenly you've got this whole world of stoma, which is, you know, it's a lie to your cancer diagnosis, but it is it's a different world and something else you've got to get used to, and like you say, something you're totally unfamiliar with. Like you, I had no idea. how all these things work. And I can remember, you know, way up after the operation, a little bit groggy in recovery, and just looking down and seeing it there and thinking, oh, that's what one looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And then thinking, wow, what am I going to do with this? Yeah. And it was, it was just a real surreal occasion, I think.
Yeah. I mean, regardless of the fact that you've just had major surgery and are sore with in a lot of pain, you've got this new thing to deal with. So I remember we had the stoma nurse came about an hour after surgery, after I'd woken up. She came to me and she says, oh, do you want to change your bag? And I said, no, I don't even want to see it. I really, my head was still not there yet, you know. So she did all that for me, but I found the stoma nurses in the hospital extremely helpful. They were really like godsend angels. And I don't know what seemed like, it's life-changing.
Yeah, the stoma nurse, stoma nurse May was amazing. Mm. She was brilliant. And, you know, as I began to get a little more strength and whatever, I sort of looked and, I'm quite analytical. So I thought, well, you know, how does this thing work? What goes where and whatever? And she was great explaining stuff. And she was great at saying, look, I'll give you a little bit of a tip. You do this or you do that. And she said, you do realize one thing. And I said, what's that? She said, we're not going to let you out of it till you can do that on your own. And that gave me real incentive, like, hey, I want to get home. So, right, I've got to master this thing. May was quite a hard taskmaster. She said, I want you to do that 100% perfect before we lay you out.
Yeah.
And in a way, that was a great incentive because it kind of took my mind off a lot of other things. And I was 100% concentrating of, right, I've got to get this right. And I've got to say, thanks to her, I did have problems, which I'm sure we'll go into. But mechanically, after that, changing it and emptying it and all that stuff, I didn't have a problem. That was fairly straightforward and easy. It was kind of a lot of psychological stuff that came after where the problem happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad you're talking about the psychological aspect because with me it was, I mean, I'd gone from a diagnosis to surgery within 6 days. So I had really no time to prepare in my mind what a stoma actually looks like or what it all entails. I was just getting ready for surgery. So when this happened and I actually came home after surgery, the very first bag change I did at home, it really hit me because I thought, I've got a permanent stoma, so this is what I have to do for the rest of my life. But it really, really hit me, even though I've been positive the whole time. But that was just it was just a short time. You know, I got myself together again and I'm fine. You know, one has up and down days, but I think the fact that they actually get you to practice and handle and manage your stoma right from the word go makes you more independent, and knowing that we have incredibly great healthcare that provides all the tools, everything that we need, is very reassuring. You know, I mean, I walk around with my bags in my back pocket everywhere. I mean, I've got a special handbag where all these things are permanently so that I'm not caught, you know, unaware. But it sort of gives you a reassurance that you've got products that are really working.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I remember the first box arriving with everything in it. It was always like Christmas opening it. I'm thinking, oh, I've got some of that. Oh, I've got one of those, and piecing it all together. And I think I had great support when I got home from the local stoma nurse here, who was terrific. And I've got to say that I think maybe I had too much time to think because I did struggle a little bit to start with. And the reason why I struggled was diet, because I suddenly thought, what am I allowed to eat? I've got no idea what I can eat. And also the thing with fluid balance, when you've got an ileostomy like I had, you have to be careful not to have too much fluid, but you also have to be careful not to have too little. And that preyed on my mind a little bit in terms of kidney function and all of these things. And for the first, I've got to say, probably June, July, August, probably till the end of August. I was really struggling.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately had an episode where I felt I had a blockage. Mm. I was taken back into hospital for 6 days. Mm. And I had three life-changing moments that occurred mm. during this whole journey. And when I was in the hospital that time, I think I'd been in probably about 5 days and I was a bit down and, mm-hmm. you know, luckily everything had cleared and stoma was back working to a sort.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came across a doctor and he said to me, do you want to go home? And I said, well, yeah. I said, you know, nothing personal. You're great. But, you know, hospital is no place to recover. And he said to me, I agree with you. You know, you need to be at home. You need to have your feet up. You can, you know, have your own surroundings. And I said, well, that's great. And he said, and now you can go home tomorrow, but I want you to remember one thing. And I said, yeah, well, what's that? He said, remember, you're in control of this, but we're here to support you.
Mm.
And suddenly that sentence changed my whole outlook because I thought, wait a minute, he's right. This mm-hmm. thing which is down here that I thought controlled me, no, I'm going to take control and I can do it because I've got the support of all these great people. So I went home
mm-hmm.
feeling a lot better. And then within probably a week, my stoma nurse had come around and said, "Oh, Pete, hi, you know, glad you're back," whatever. She said to me, "Look, I know you've struggled a little bit with this. How about having some counselling?" And I said, "Yeah, okay, mm-hmm. sounds good." Interestingly, I had a chat with my oncologist, and then when I told the oncologist, he said, "Oh, really good for you." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, large number of my male patients don't want to know about counselling." He said, mm-hmm. "You've done really good for that." Mm-hmm. So I had counselling 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's all done by Zoom, like we're chatting now with a brilliant counsellor.
Yeah.
We laughed, we cried, mm-hmm. We brought the world to rights. We talked about all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But she changed my life as well, because one day, I think it's second counselling session, she said to me, "Remember, you will never be the same person again once you've gone through this." And I thought, oh, it's a bit depressing, isn't it? You know, mm-hmm. but she gave it a little pause and she said, "But also, you could come out of this the new improved model." And I thought, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right, Leslie. Mm-hmm. I could, couldn't I?
Yeah.
So within probably about 2 weeks, I had a doctor telling me I was in control mm-hmm. and someone else saying, "Well, actually, when you've gone through this, you might come out a better person."
Mm-hmm.
And those two things at that time changed my whole outlook on life.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, you know, something like that, if you basically change the way you look at something, the whole scenario changes.
And yeah, it's exactly what happened, mm-hmm. you know, which was, and, you know, the other thing my stoma nurse, Alison, said to me was, "Have you given it a name?" And I said,
"Yeah,
what?" No. You got to give it a name.
Yeah.
And so my stoma was called Cliff.
Oh, wow.
And it almost from then on became mm-hmm. its own separate little person.
Yeah.
And one of the things I did, and one of the things I wanted to do at the beginning was, and I think you may have been the same, that when you go through this, you have a decision to make at the beginning that I'm going to be very private about this. I'm not going to let anybody know. I'm just mm-hmm. going to tell my very close family, yeah. or I'm going to tell everybody everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went down the latter route and thought, mm-hmm. hey, I'll set up a WhatsApp group, then mm-hmm. I can send everybody. Well, it's called Pete's Medical Bulletins. It's still going. Wow. And wow. I'm still sending messages out every now and again. And this goes out to, you know, quite a few people, family and friends. And also, it's a bit selfish. It saves me answering 20 phone calls telling people the same thing,
yeah.
but also keeps everybody, you know, up to date yeah. what's going on. And my friends and family were amazing because they took on Cliff as almost being mm. another little person.
Yeah, absolutely.
How's Cliff? You know, whatever. And it suddenly took the mystique all the way out of it. It suddenly wasn't a stoma. Suddenly wasn't an ileostomy. It was Cliff.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, again, that was brilliant advice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's sort of, it makes it real and it makes it something not to be ashamed about and just talk about it like in a normal fashion. I remember when a day before my surgery, I mean, we knew I was going in there and coming out there with a permanent stoma. I mean, the chances of me not having a permanent stoma were close to zero. So I wasn't under any false pretenses. And I remember my husband and my children, they just gave me a big hug and they said, "We are loving the stoma that's coming our way." You know, and I thought that just gave me such a confident boost because I myself didn't know what was happening, but I knew they had my back. So I've also given it a name, and you're going to laugh now. But, you know, I was a flight attendant for almost 30 years. And the positions where you sit as a flight attendant, now I was a purser. So I sat right behind the cockpit for most of the time. And you have a position for each door that you sit in. So when you call the cockpit, you just say, okay, this is 1L phoning or 2R or whatever, 1-2 left. So I always sat at door 1L. So my stoma is called my emergency exit 1L. It's when I talk about 1L, everybody knows in my family because that's where I sat as a flight attendant all my career. And now I have my emergency exit for the rest of my life. So yeah, here you go.
I think that's cracking. That is really good. Probably one of the best ones I heard, actually, is somebody called there's Fred Flynn Stoma. But there's all sorts of names. And it brings a smile as well. But I think it serves a real purpose of taking the mystery out of the whole thing. You know, it's a bit like my show on dementia. Hey, let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, the more people talk about this, you know, all my friends are used to it now. Mm-hmm. I've got a friend like you who's got permanent stoma. And to be honest, when I first met him, I'd probably known him about 9 months. And then he told me. I had absolutely no idea. Yeah. I've got another friend who's been a real, who's been superb in supporting me. And she, like me, had a temporary stoma, went through the same operation, and she's been absolutely brilliant because, she said, "Look, I don't want to worry you, but, you know, this might happen." I was, "That happened. Yeah, that happened to me." And it is so good to talk to people who've been there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I find that absolutely, it's crucial. It was crucial for me as well. One of my very good friends, her mother went through bowel cancer, but she didn't want a stoma for about 15 years. She absolutely refused to have one, and her life was actually not worth living because she'd actually spent most of the time near a toilet because it was just one of those things. And when I told my friend what was happening to me, she said, it'll be okay. Everything will be okay. Because as soon as her mom had that operation, she'd said, "Well, why didn't I have this done 15 years ago? You know, it would have been so much better." But I think, you know, part of it being vanity, I suppose, or not knowing, thinking, "Oh, this is something I've got to be ashamed of. I don't know how to handle it." Well, that's why I've created the show, to actually tell people it's okay. You can manage and you can live a full life with a stoma, be it a reversal that's going to happen, or with a permanent stoma. It is manageable and you can live a full life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, we're both examples of that, aren't we? That, you can do. I mean, the reversal, I'll talk a little bit about the reversal, perhaps, if we, you know, have people listening who like me, have a temporary stoma and for reversal. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about that after the commercial break?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back to Stoma for Life. I'm chatting to Pete Hill, and he will tell us more about his bowel cancer journey. And we were just touching on the subject of reversal. Now, I know that reversal is often referred to as takedown. So perhaps you can share a bit more about your experience.
Yeah, I think, you know, I had an interesting experience because when I had my ileostomy in June 2022, it was envisaged at the time that I would have reversal fairly quickly. So it would be in the autumn of the same year. Okay. But when I had my results back after my operation, they take a number of lymph nodes and they look at those and see if there's any problem with those. Thankfully for me, there wasn't. But my colorectal surgeon said, look, we haven't found anything there, which is good, but there's always the slight possibility that maybe some microscopic cells left in your blood supply around that area. So he said, look, I just want you to go and have a word with an oncologist. So I went to see the oncologist, Dr. Dan Grails, a lovely guy. And Dan said to me, look, you know, you've got an 85% chance now that nothing nasty will happen and it won't come back. He said, you can walk away from me now with that 85% chance and we may never see each other again. He said, or I could give you some doses of chemo by pill format, number of cycles, and I can raise that chance to over 90%. And I sat there and thought, you know, again, you've got another decision to make here, 85, 90%. And I thought, well, I'd be letting everybody down if I didn't really take this chance to give myself a greater chance to go back to normal and be around for longer. So I said, okay, I'll sign up for that. The net thing of that was obviously it put my reversal back quite a time because I had to go through the chemo, which in my case, I've got to say, was pretty good. I had a few, you know, you get, again, with all these things, you get strange side effects. I think my hair stopped growing, but it certainly didn't fall out.
Oh, wow.
It was a little bit difficult. And strangely, with a stoma, and I'd be really interested if anybody's listening who's gone through the same thing, what you do when you have chemo by pill format, you go 2 weeks on, a week off, 2 weeks on, a week off of taking the tablets. And the strangest thing happened because, and even the oncology people thought this was strange, my stoma was under better control when I was taking the chemo pills than when I came off.
Oh, wow.
Which was, you know, again, strange, but, you know, they were kind of minor things. And so I kind of breezed, you know, I was really lucky. I breezed through that till February of this year. And then we had to wait at least 8 weeks before the reversal for the chemo to get out of your system. So that took us to April. And so we fixed up a date in April for, first of all, for me to have scans again to make sure, you know, everybody knew what where everything was and where it was going. And the day arrives, I went in. I got told, you know, this is a much minor operation compared to the last one. One of the surgeons actually told me about the first one. He said, I don't really want to worry you, but what you've been through is pretty much the equivalent of being hit by a bus. And the way I felt, I thought, yeah, you're pretty right there.
Yeah.
So we go to reversal time. I go into hospital. I go into the operating theatre. I come out of the operating theatre. I suddenly look down and think, wait a minute, have you not forgotten something? Cliff's still here. So I'm in recovery. Surgeon comes out of recovery and says, look, sorry, Pete, we couldn't go through it. Let me get cleaned up. I'll come up and see you and tell you why.
Wow.
So I'm thinking, you know, what's going on here? So he came up and he said, look, the reason why we didn't do it is that I felt something that I wasn't quite happy with. We could have gone ahead with it, but I don't want to do this because this could affect you 100% through the rest of your life. So I want to get it 100% right. So at a point like that, you go and argue, can you? You think, fair play. So 2 more scans, a further colonoscopy revealed I had a lot of scar tissue.
Okay.
And evidently my body is very good at producing scar tissue, which is, you know, it's not a medal-winning activity or anything, but it's something my body's good at. And he said, well, look, you know, now we know what we're at. We can deal with that, but it is going to be a slightly longer and more difficult operation because we have to deal with all the scar tissue. So in May of this year, I went in, operation, and out again. The night before my operation, again, got another funny moment. I had a number of WhatsApps from my friends who were saying goodbye to Cliff. Not asking how I was, but we're really sad Cliff's going. And we then brought up the whole thing, which kind of raised my spirits before the op. I said, well, Cliff's going actually back inside to join all his friends. And I hope when he gets in there, he doesn't party too much, you know, because he's back where he should be. And then I had the reversal. And then, you know, after the reversal, some fun started as well, and things that maybe, you know, I didn't expect after the reversal operation. I don't know if you want me to go into talking about that or...
Well, I'm sure, because I have no idea what a reversal all entails, because obviously it's never been on the cards for me. So If you would like to, if you're comfortable with sharing that, by all means, I'm sure a lot of people out there would like to know prior to their own reversal what actually happens.
Yeah, you know, simply, anatomically, it's a rejoining of your whole intestinal system, because you know, originally your lower bowel gets blocked off. If you like. And I got explained it's a bit like a road diversion. Road this area closed, we're going to divert into the stoma. And what happens when you have a reversal is the reverse. The road gets opened up again. And so therefore your lower bowel, which hasn't been used for, in my case, 11 months. Having said that, actually, one thing I think we ought to go into just as a slight offshoot of this is just because your lower bowel's not used, and I'm sure people would be comfortable with talking about stuff like this, doesn't mean you don't get some discharges out of your lower bowel and you still don't get some wind, because you do. And that scares you when you've got a stoma and you think, wait a minute, I thought all that was closed. Well, no. There are, you know, things that still happen down there. So things get opened back up again. And obviously your body, having had 11 months of diversion and got used to a stoma, now has to go in the opposite direction and get used to, you know, how things were prior to the operation. And it also has to get used to life with a shorter intestine, because you've had part removed during your operation. It very much depends then where you've had the removal, how lower it is down your bowel, as to what the next consequences are. To begin with, it was quite difficult. My surgeon was delighted on day 4, I think it was, when I actually went to the toilet, and he shook my hand and said, oh, well done, wonderful. And that's the one thing they look for, because it proves that something is working.
It's working.
Join back together again. Mm-hmm. But what happens after that is to try and regain any form of regularity mm-hmm. that you had is difficult and can take a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of began to think, oh, wait a minute, you know, why is this happening? I'm going to the toilet more often than I was mm-hmm. sometimes, and other times I'm not. I'm actually going less often. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, what's this all about? And then I discovered what was called lower anterior resection syndrome, or LARS, mm-hmm. as it's commonly known as. Now, this is a syndrome that, as far as I'm aware, most people who have a reversal operation like me do get in some format.
Mm-hmm.
Now, either you can get it very minor or you can have really drastic effects. And it seems to revolve around the amount of treatment you've had, the amount of mm-hmm. chemo you've had, whether you've had radiotherapy, where the joint was, mm-hmm. all these things seem to get together as to what form you will have. The best way I can explain it to people is there is actually a Facebook group. Mm-hmm. I know people may have thoughts on social media and use and whatever, but this one has been superb for me. It's the Lower Anterior Resection Syndrome, or LARS, Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
And it's full of people throughout the world who are going through or have gone through the same thing. There's some mm-hmm. brilliant advice up there, some great documents. And sadly, it appears in some parts of the world, particularly in the US, strangely, a lot of surgeons and doctors have still not heard of LARS.
Oh, my gosh.
There's a doctor in New Zealand who's written a brilliant paper mm-hmm. about it. And it's a whole new world that you have to learn. It involves diet, particularly. Because
mm-hmm.
You know, the thing with the stoma diet I found is obviously you're on a low fiber diet
mm-hmm.
With an ileostomy, and I was being told, well, really, you need to eat these things which are relatively high in fat, relatively high in carbs, dairy products, etc., to bulk yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a bit alien to my diet, which is why I found it a little bit difficult. And then suddenly, when you have your reversal, you're suddenly told, well, actually, no, stay off the dairy products, mm-hmm. stay off of this, and start going back to having fiber in your diet.
Okay.
And that, again, with your body's had, in my case, 11 months of this type of diet, mm-hmm. and then suddenly everything changes again.
Yeah.
And so logically, you think of it, you think, well, no wonder I'm going to have a few problems to start with until things start, you know, to go back and your body starts to recognize where you're at.
Mm.
And two things, I don't know if anybody listening, two things I've found are helpful is I've gone largely gluten-free mm-hmm. in my diet, which has helped, and also in a fair amount lactose-free as well. And I'm following what's called, not 100%, but about 75%, I am following what's called the low FODMAP, which is F-O-D-M-A-P diet.
Okay.
And this is a diet that people use for irritable bowel syndrome.
Wow. Now, did you find all this out yourself? There was nobody really there to guide you or to tell you about this, if I heard correctly. You sort of went on your own journey to find out what LARS is or what the symptoms were.
Yeah, largely. Mm-hmm. I did it. I've got a very good link nurse who's my link with the hospital who mm-hmm. was brilliant, who, you know, contacted me at home. She used to phone me every week after my operation and, mm-hmm. you know, we developed a real friendship. So she's pointed me in the right direction in some areas, but the whole LARS thing and the diet thing,
mm-hmm.
I think, it's frustrating because, well, it's not frustrating that we're all different, but it is frustrating that we find out how different we are.
Mm.
Because this whole thing is, you know, you get removal of the tumor joining back together again. Thank you very much. Away you go. You're now a complete human in a lot of people's eyes, where actually, because of everything you've gone through, as my counselor said, you've become a different person. And now you react to things in a different way. So strangely, things you like. And I was told this by my link nurse. She said, look, this will sound really strange, but things you liked before, you may not like now in terms of your diet. Yeah. Things that gave you a problem before may well not give you a problem now, but things that didn't give you a problem last time might give you a problem. So you're in this whole world where you're wondering, when you eat something, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And it's all by trial and error. And we as humans think, and we always, in my previous life as an environmental health practitioner, we dealt a lot with food poisonings and things like that. And the normal human reaction is to blame the last thing you ate. So
yes,
if you have a problem, it always that sandwich I had at lunchtime or whatever. But in effect, the amount of time that food takes to pass through your intestinal system can be 48 to 72 hours.
Yeah.
So you can be looking at something you ate 3 days ago, which gives you a problem. Now, in terms of once you've had your reversal and diet, you can see how important it is to keep some kind of food diary.
Yeah.
To look back on, well, what did I have 3 days ago?
Yes.
Could be that.
Exactly. So it's basically trial and error, or eliminating foods out of your dietary plan to see how you react to it or how it actually aids you.
That's absolutely it. And it's a very long process, because if the normal person wrote down everything that I ate during a day,
you'd be amazed.
You'd be amazed. And any one part of that can cause you a problem. So what you have to do is eliminate one part of that, but eat all the rest, and then eliminate another part of it, and go along like that. And that's why you kind of learn about groups and things like gluten. And you think, wait a minute, all these things have something in common. And gluten's one of them. And it's not a problem for everybody. But for some people, it really is. And when you look into, I've started looking into the stuff just generally related to gut health, irrespective of cancer, ileostomies, or whatever. And a lot of the stuff that's said there really makes sense to me now. And it was stuff that I never even thought of before. Yeah. And it's about gluten-free and lactose-free and this kind of, and lectins as well, which is another area. I didn't realise that, I love tomatoes before. Yeah. I thought, hey, yeah, tomatoes are great. Well, tomatoes, sadly, are now the enemy in the raw tomato format because there's lots of lectins in them, and lectin seems to be one of the areas that gives people like me a problem. Mm-hmm. But I can still eat a pizza and I can still have sauces containing tomatoes, but I can't eat a raw tomato.
Okay. So once it's been cooked, it's not your enemy anymore.
Yeah. So it's become a real science, to be honest. And I think I've perhaps bore my friends a bit and become a bit of an anorak around it. But you have to. And you have to compare with people who've gone through it. I mean, my friend I was talking about it, she said to me when, we were staying with her and her husband, who's my oldest school friend, and we were staying there. And she said, I had three years since she had her reversal, she said, and I had a soft ice cream the other day. She said, oh, and I wish I hadn't. Because it gave her a problem. And she said, but what I have discovered is this. And she got, I won't advertise it, but she got a tub of ice cream out of the freezer and said, try this one. And she said, I'm fine with that. I can't eat this one. I can eat that one. Wow. And I eat the one that now she said, and I'm fine with ice cream.
Fine as well. But so, I mean, bless her for having tried and having actually found the one that works for her. But, I find a lot of people are not prepared to change or to actually look what actually causes the problem. A lot of people will just go about it and carry on and wonder, okay, well, my life is just not worth living anymore because I'm not getting any better. So I commend you for actually having gone to discover and to research how you can actually, like, you know, change your diet so that you can live without having any problems. Because I find, like I said, a lot of people don't really, they don't want to change anything because change, you know, to change doesn't always have to be negative. It can also be positive. But a lot of people hang on to what they know and are afraid of the unknown. So I commend you for having tried all this, and you're a great advocate on the subject. And I'm so glad you speak so openly about it.
Yeah, thanks. You know, I think, well, that brings me around to a third life-changing moment, actually, because I did promise you there were three. Yeah. And part of the reason why I have adopted that approach was around about February of this year, I think it was, I saw something from Macmillan, a great organisation, mm-hmm. And it said sign up for 6 weeks for the HOPE course, which was quite close to where I live. Mm-hmm. And basically, I can't remember what HOPE stands for, to be honest, but look up the Macmillan website and it'll be on there.
I'll do that.
And the HOPE course is a 6-week course for people that are had cancer, going through cancer, mm-hmm. okay, at the time, various stages, various cancers. And basically, it gets people round a table for 6 weeks, chatting and also learning things from diets to mm-hmm. meditation to finance to, you know, all sorts mm-hmm. of stuff. And I stood outside a church hall thinking, well, there's going to be about 12 people in there that I don't know at all.
Yeah.
And it could be a bit awkward, you know, you're going in there, you don't know these people.
So it was a face-to-face, not a Zoom.
Oh, yeah. No, mm-hmm. face-to-face, mm-hmm. which was good because, you know, COVID was on the decline. So it was a face-to-face. And I went in and within 10 minutes, and the people there also agree with me, you know, I meet them still, was everybody realised they've got this bond. We've mm-hmm. all gone through some mm-hmm. life-changing experience. Yeah. It didn't matter what cancer you had.
No,
that was immaterial. No. We all had this bond. And mm-hmm. we all meet up still every 5 to 6 weeks and just chat and whatever. Oh. And 4 or 5 of us have got a WhatsApp group going. We right. really support each other. And it was that support mm-hmm. from those people particularly that got me thinking of a thing that the five of us now all agree with. And it was, you asked a sort of a mantra. It's not really a mantra, but it's something that we all said that this is what we're now doing. And it was basically, we didn't want to be a member of this club, but now we are, mm-hmm. we're going to make the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is why all my research into stuff and looking into mm-hmm. diets and all that, that's why it's happening. And I go back to the quote from my counsellor who said, you could come out of this a new improved model.
Yeah.
Well, I want to. So that's what I'm trying.
Absolutely. We're going to break for a short commercial break again to hear from our station sponsors, and then we will continue this absolutely fantastic and interesting journey that you've gone through, Pete. Okay, we'll be back in a sec.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I'm chatting to Pete Hill, who's really opened my eyes to a lot of things that he's gone through. He spoke about his reversal surgery that he had about 4 months ago, which is also called takedown. And actually, the things that come with a reversal. And I was absolutely intrigued what you said with your last sentence about the hope course that you went through, meeting up with people that have gone through whichever kind of cancer, but you are joined through this common denominator called cancer, and you are still in contact with them. I think it's absolutely great. I mean, it's different to a Facebook group where you're sort of anonymous, you're just sort of somebody typing, but now you're actually seeing people in the flesh and you're able to talk to them face to face, which I think is so much, it's actually so much better.
Yeah, you know, it's lovely. We've all become friends, you know, we swap pictures of grandchildren and holidays and whatever. Yeah. We all learned from each other. And it's this kind of thing about being in the same boat. I can remember the first meeting that I went to. One thing, I'd say, following on from what I said about my oncologist earlier in the conversation, actually, there were 12 people in the room and only two guys, me and my friend Jim.
Okay.
There were 10 ladies. And again, mm-hmm. this seems to be the kind of group that men don't want to gravitate towards. I don't know why. And we were going around and they were saying, oh, you had chemo pills and whatever. Mm. Oh, I had chemo, I had this, whatever. And someone said, yeah, does anybody have any kind of strange things that came out of chemo? And I said, well, yeah, this is going to sound really weird. Mm-hmm. Okay. But when I was on those chemo pills, I was having really strange, vivid dreams involving people I probably haven't seen for 30 years.
Wow.
And suddenly my friend Jim chimed up and he said, oh, I am so glad you've said that, because some mornings I wake up and think, what on earth was that all about? and suddenly you've got something in common. You said, well, yeah, Jim, it was that. It's not only the serious stuff.
Mm.
It's stuff like that as well that kind of bonds you together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find talking is a form of healing. The more you talk about something, and when you can bond with it over even just a cup of tea, you know, it helps you so much in your own personal journey.
Yeah, undoubtedly. You know, my friends have been unbelievable. I cannot thank my friends, and my family have been brilliant. And the one thing that has carried me through, it's carried me through life, and one thing that the new improved model is going to be exactly the same as the old model, is sense of humour. Because your ability to laugh is so, so important. And I know that, you know, I talk about dementia and the D word, but we still have sense of humour. Mm-hmm. And I talk about cancer and we still have a sense of humour. And a lot of people back off those subjects and think, oh, no, I can't find them things amusing. Yeah. Well, you talk to people that are living with dementia and you talk to people like us who are going through a cancer journey.
Yeah.
And I tell you, you definitely can have sense of humour.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And you shouldn't lose that, because, I mean, they do say that, you know, if you laugh, it sets off so many things in your body. And it's also a step in the right direction of healing.
Yeah, it's undoubtedly so. When I was in the hospital, I could tell you about the physiotherapist that I had. And I don't know about you after the operation, but when I had my operation, I got rid of all the tubes and everything and whatever. It was a big celebration, you know. Hey, I've got rid of my cannula and everything and whatever. And I said, well, you can go and have a shower. And it's like, wow, I can have a shower on my own. Mm-hmm. Well, when I came back from having that shower, I felt like I'd run the London Marathon. And I thought, how can one shower make you feel so tired?
Then
the physio turned up. And the physio was just one of the funniest guys I have ever met, because he was into really cheesy humor and dad jokes, as I call them. Okay. And we swapped jokes, and he took me down the corridor. And also it happened that he supported the same football team as me, which did help. And so we chatted about that. And the key to him being so good was, after I had that shower, 2 days later, he had me walking up two flights of stairs, and I got to the top and thought, oh, I didn't even notice I'd done that.
Wow.
Because he'd got my mind engaged so much in other things and laughing, talking about football and things. They'd done his job brilliantly.
Wow.
And that area of humour really helped me. It's helped me to get fit again.
Absolutely. A wonderful, beautiful story, because it just goes to show also the mindset, not of just you, but also the mindset of the person that's working with you is so important. And we need more people like that, that are in that frame of mind to help those that have gone through what must be the most daunting time of your life, you know?
Yeah, I said to, my surgeon, Al Windsor, my oncologist, Dan Crowell, they both know, and also Mr. Windsor is another one of the surgeons. I said to all three of them, I feel that you're very personable. I can chat to you about anything. They all have a sense of humour. We can all have a bit of a laugh. And I said, from a patient perspective, that gives me 100% confidence that it's my life in your hands. I'm 100% confident in you guys because of that manner. And I think what you said is absolutely right. It cannot be understated, the real power of the people looking after you, how they treat you. And I was treated brilliantly. And it is so, so important because, I said you're all brilliant technical people, far more than I've ever forgotten. But, they turned around to me and said, well, yeah, that's no good if we go and talk to people. They've said, the reason why we're involved in this is, we're very interested in medicine, but we like people.
Of course.
And that's just so important.
Absolutely. And I'm sure even if you're a person that might not engage in jokes or, it's sort of if your surgeon or if the people that are there to basically save your life, if they take it on a lighter note or actually get you to smile about things, maybe it takes time or you will actually learn to reflect and maybe say, okay, maybe, there is a chance. Maybe I can get through this. It sort of brings a whole different connotation to the subject if the person that is dealing with you is also engaging, laughing, or is basically trying to uplift you. What is going to happen to me and how am I going to get out on the other side? And I'm just so pleased that both of us have gotten out on top on the other side. You as well as myself, the improved version. Sadly, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you so much, Pete, for sharing your personal bowel cancer story. I think there were a lot of real nuggets in everything you shared with us today. I absolutely loved your three light bulb moments, and I'm sure our listeners can relate to all of that. Now, if you would like to follow Pete on either Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, I've got the handles for you now. So for Twitter, it's @RadioTDW. For Instagram, TDW_radio. And if you would like to follow him on Facebook, it's RadioTDW. Thank you so much, Pete Hill. I'm going to say thank you, bye-bye, and speak soon.